Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. A lot of the stories we hear about China today focus on our trade debt with the world's largest country. And while foreign relations with China are important to our economic health, they don't represent the full picture of the largest country in the world. A huge population shift is happening in China from rural to urban, and it's having a seismic shift in the way the country works and the way it does business. That shift is the focus of a new book by Wisconsin native Michelle Damon Loyalka. Loyalka grew up in La Crosse and went to Marquette University, but she's lived in China for the past 13 years. Her new book is called Eating Bitterness. Of course, other places, the U.S., Europe, and elsewhere, have experienced a migration from the countryside to the cities. Loyalka tells Lake Effect's Dan Harmon how the phenomenon is different in China.
I think there are a few things that are different. One thing is that because China had this system of collectivized agriculture in the past, so at that time nobody owned land. It was collectively farmed by everybody. When that system ended in the late 70s and early 80s, what the government essentially did was in every village, the local government divvied up all the land among the farmers in that village. And this system is still in place today. So if you're born as a rural resident in China, at birth you receive a parcel of land. And you don't essentially own it. You can't sell it. You lose it if you let it go fallow. And when you die, it returns back to the village to be redistributed to the next generation. But otherwise, it's yours for life. That's seen as a very important kind of form of social security for the rural population. But the problem is by the time you divvy up all of the arable land in China among 800 million rural residents, the average parcel of land is about a sixth of an acre. So even if you assume a Chinese family of four, that's amount of land is about 600 times less than an American family farm. So obviously at that level, it's not enough land to be a viable means of livelihood. So it's really just a sustenance insurance plan. So farmers in China who want to do more than just keep their families fed, they typically need to send somebody to the cities to look for work. And so I think in that way, it's a lack of land is really a pushing force, pushing people out of the countryside, especially now with mechanized agriculture. You just don't need so many farmers in China.
One of the first things that struck me about your book is in the beginning, the scale of just numbers of people moving into cities. I mean, you just said that there's 800 million rural people out of a country of 1.2 billion, and that's still way more than half. And the even more staggering figure, I thought, I'll just put it out there, was that you said there will be 300 million people moving into the cities or more, which is the whole population of the U.S. moving from country to the city.
That's right. I mean, if you think about the whole population of the U.S. up and moving to a new city, finding new jobs, finding new houses, all within the space of about 20 years, I think it would be total chaos probably. And so when you think about it like that, you see the enormous challenge that lies ahead for the Chinese government and the potential for things to go wrong on, you know, multiple levels. So I think that in the West, we don't typically hear about migration in China too much. Western news still kind of focuses on things like trade policies and currency issues when it talks about China. But I think now we're starting to see more and more discussion of this issue of migration in China. And it's really emerging as sort of the key domestic challenge that China will face in the coming decade or more. So it's really a huge issue for China.
Okay. This is not a book about government policy. It's right. Hardly even mentioned. This is more about you follow eight people who you met and knew in China through their plight, if you will, from moving from rural to urban. And these aren't all negative stories. As a matter of fact, I found them to be kind of encouraging. Maybe I'm just painting it with a rosy brush, I don't know, but it seems like it's a lot about self-determination. People now have the choice whether they want to stay in the countryside, which is maybe not really a good choice, but or they can try to augment their family income in the cities. And the thing I took from it was that there's a lot of opportunity, even though some of it's small-scale opportunity, but there's a lot more that people can do to foster their own future.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I don't think that these stories are all negative. You know, the title of the book is Eating Bitterness, and that might sound a bit negative in English, but actually that comes from a Chinese word, which is churku, which means sort of this ability to endure difficulties and persevere and move forward without sort of complaining and, you know, stopping to really think about too much, just sort of plowing forward. And in Chinese, there's this word churku sort of encompasses all of those terms in one. And there's not really one term in English that can do that. So translated it directly into eating bitterness. But I think that that really is what first attracted me to these people, because often I think the sort of storyline when we talk about migrants is that they're sort of downtrodden victims of oppression, that kind of thing. But that wasn't my experience with the people that I met. I think that they're really full of life and full of vigor, and they take a lot of initiative, and they're very entrepreneurial minded. They're sort of able to continually remold themselves to meet the changing demands of the Chinese economy and to ensure for themselves a place in this society that is changing so quickly that, you know, it's kind of breathtaking. So I'm really in awe of them. I think if I was in that situation, I probably would have kind of given up and gone home a long time ago. But they really sort of continue to move ahead despite the difficulties. And I think that, you know, China, a lot of China's development in the last 30 years really has sort of depended on their labor, not just because it's a large labor force and a very sort of inexpensive labor force, but because they have this spirit to keep moving and work through the difficulties.
And also they're very aware of their plight or their situation or their position in society. Some of them know that they're limited, and mm-hmm. yet they're doing the best they can with their either limited education or their limited social status, if you will, and others with the same backgrounds are becoming, you use the term big boss for one of them, people that own multiple businesses and have this entrepreneurial spirit that doesn't even enter their mind that they could not succeed. I mean, it's just part of their fabric.
That's right. I think they don't really stop too much they don't put obstacles in their own way. They just sort of press ahead. One lady that I met, she in this course of about a year or two, she had gone from selling eggs on the street corner to selling produce to shining shoes to running a clothing store. She, you know, just very quickly and very kind of seamlessly had changed directions many times. And when I said, you know, how amazing that was that she was able to change so much, she thought nothing of it. For her, she said, this is the way you do things when you have no other way. You just change and go on.
I guess not realizing that's its own kind of freedom.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, I'm trying to, and maybe it's not necessarily a fair comparison, but compare that mindset with people here that say that they, either people that choose a career path, or they want to become entrepreneurs. But it seems here that there's more barriers, especially small scale entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that's right. For example, in the book, there's a story of a man who sharpens knives. And essentially, when he came from the countryside, the day he arrived, he was in business. He had a grinding stone and he had built himself a little bench. And that was all he needed to go into business. He didn't need a business license or permits or anything like that. And, you know, over the last 20 years, that's kind of been the migrant model. A lot of times we tend to think of China's migrants as working in factories. But in fact, only about a third of all of the migrants work in factories. The rest of them are sort of intimately involved in every aspect of China's own domestic life. And they're really involved in building up the urban areas and helping them to run smoothly. And so a lot of migrants that you see will come to the cities and sort of engage in very small-time entrepreneurial work. And they don't need permits or anything like that. And the government has sort of, for the last 20 years, just left them alone, I guess you'd say. They haven't really enforced labor laws to protect them, but they haven't also given them a lot of barriers that, you know, made it too difficult for them to do business. And it's changing, though. So that man, for example, who sharpens knives, he knows that he's sort of the end of an era. There's not that many people left out there like him. And the police are kind of starting to shoo him out of the more fancy areas just because it doesn't look good to have people like that kind of wandering the streets anymore.
In the high-tech zones.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Well, how did you meet these eight people?
Well, I had lived in China for 7 years or so before I ever started to write about it. And I had lived in this particular area that I'm writing about as well. So some of them I knew. So, for example, the vegetable vendors, I had bought my vegetables from them for several years. But I never really had a conversation with them beyond sort of what's the price of cucumbers today. And so when I wanted to write the book, I started to have more deep conversations with people who I was already interacting with. And I found a lot of them had, you know, very interesting life stories to tell. And so some of them just I included in the book. Then there were also people who I went and found. So I I was writing about this particular village in the middle of this high-tech area in Xi'an, and that village was about to be torn down. And so mostly migrants, they can't afford to live in this the city itself, and they tend to live in these old villages and rent out very small rooms there. And so when this village was going to be torn down, I spent a lot of time in that village sort of meeting people there and looking for people I could interview. And there were also people who found me. So, for example, there's a chapter about girls who come right out of middle school to work in the cities, and they end up in a salon giving massages and facials. And they were on the street distributing free massage coupons one day, and they were very enthusiastic and tracked me down that way. So kind of a mix of how I found the people.
So aside from this being really interesting and people that are interested in other cultures finding this to be a point of comparison, if nothing else, but what is it that you think Americans should really take from this knowledge? I guess why should we care, or
right.
Is there something useful for us to know this?
Well, I think there's a couple things that I hope people will bring away from the book. I think the first one is just to put a human side to China's development, because I think more and more it's really easy for Americans just to start looking at China as being our economic competitors or something like that. But I think it's important to know that beneath sort of this economic picture that we're always hearing about China are just people like any of us who really just are looking for a better life for themselves and for their family and for their country. And they're really enduring a lot and sacrificing a lot to make that happen. And so I think it's important just in terms of international relations for people to realize that there's a, sort of this human side to China's development. And I think also this spirit of eating bitterness is another important takeaway. I don't think it's a quality that's particular to China. It's a value that, you know, has been sort of upheld for a long time in China, but I think that it's a human quality, and we see it throughout history. And I think that we saw it a lot in America when the first immigrants were coming to America, and sort of their really hard work ethic and how, you know, on that their labor, America sort of advanced really quickly. And I think that, you know, in America, maybe the lifestyle has developed to such a degree that it's sort of hard to maintain that willingness to sort of plow through any difficulty that comes your way. I think that's a natural thing. And we see it in China, in fact, with the younger generation now, that they're not so willing to sort of endure as much as the older generations were, and they're definitely looking for, you know, more comfort. They're willing to have difficulties as long as they know it's a temporary means to a more comfortable end. But I think that there's something really admirable that we can bring away from these stories about sort of that human spirit's, you know, time-tested ability to persevere through great difficulties.
Something else that I found interesting is that I said they're not unaware of their place in society, but they're also not unaware, quite a few of your subjects, of the cultural change or towards materialism. And it seems, maybe with the exception of a few of them, they weren't really comfortable with that idea. They're very aware that as soon as you start wanting stuff and wanting more money and cars and houses, right, that something is lost in that process. And they're profoundly disturbed that they're going to be losing either their connection to the land or the connection to their family or just the desire to have a simple and humble life, all that's going to be destroyed.
That's right. I think there's one woman who really talked about in the book, that this idea that you have to kind of rein in your desires or not allow yourself to even think about your desires too much, because otherwise it kind of starts this sort of chain reaction where you want more and more and more. And as a migrant, you maybe aren't able to achieve those things. And so a lot of migrants sort of just push ahead. What I often say is kind of blindly eating bitterness, not thinking about much else that they want in life. And in fact, for example, that knife sharpener that I was mentioning earlier, I asked him when he first came out to the cities about 20 years ago, he had four children that he left behind in the village with his wife. And I asked him, you know, what were his goals and his dreams at that time? And he laughed at me and he said, what dreams, what goals? You know, I wanted to keep my kids fed. As long as I could make enough money to do that, I was satisfied. And there was no time to really think about anything more than that. And the younger generations don't have that quite to that extreme. But I think that mindset still largely prevails, that people try not to think about wanting too much more than what they have.
Well, I find it interesting that all the people you talk to are very aware of the shift that's going on. Is there anyone who's either keeping track of the bigger picture, the bigger cultural shift, or not just government, but writers or journalists or anyone you can think of that is kind of putting it out there, you know, like, you know, either in the sense of what are we doing? Are we destroying kind of our cultural values, or the other side of the spectrum, you know, just full steam ahead and oh, that's all in the past, you know, who cares?
There's actually a really great book that's not out yet. It'll be out in the summer. It's called Chinese Characters, and that's an anthology of modern writers on China. And the subtitle is Fast-Changing Lives in a Fast-Changing Land. And I think that those stories really sort of epitomize exactly what you're talking about, this cultural shift in different ways. You know, these people, different writers wrote about them in different times, so they're not really, the stories aren't related to each other, but they really show how this cultural shift is happening and sort of if it needs to be assessed, as you're saying, or just sort of carry on.
Well, I really enjoyed reading your book.
Thank you for coming back. Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me. It's great to be here.
Wisconsin native Michelle Damon Loyalka is the author of Eating Bitterness, Stories from the Front Lines of China's Great Urban Migration, published by the University of California Press. Loyalka grew up in La Crosse and graduated from Marquette University. She now lives in Beijing. She'll talk about the book tonight at Boswell Book Company in Milwaukee.